continue today with elements of string theory necessary to build the ADS CFT correspondence. So so last time we considered type 2B supergravity. And that was the low energy limit. And low energy always would mean that our energies will be much less than the typical string scale, which is 1 over length of the string. So the type 2B low energy equations of motion that we wrote on the board last time, and there was this one type of it I will ask you actually to correct. So these equations that we wrote on the board, they follow from the action with one exception. So apart from the self-duality condition, so this is a subtle point. I will apart from the self-duality condition on our phi form. Remember, we had this phi form in the game F tilde five, and it was self-dual. And that is an important ingredient in the equations of motion. So we will see that there is a bit of a difficulty of incorporating this particular condition in the action. But apart from that, they follow from the action plus, so we will write down the action, you can derive equations of motion from the action, and then you impose, on top of that, you impose the self-duality condition. That it will not automatically follow from the action that we write, but it is part of the equations of motion. So we will need also the action, because in holography, in addition to equations of motion, you also need the action to compute the correlation functions. So that will be important. Now, so let me write this in the following form. You might remember from the string theory course that you can have the so-called Einstein frame or string frame, depending on the presence of the factor with a dilaton in front of your usual Einstein-Hilbert term. So this ES corresponds to the statement that we will write down this action in the Einstein frame, which will be more convenient for our purposes in holography. So this action consists of three pieces. They are labeled by these letters NS and R. So this means that the fields entering the action will come from Neuwirth-Schwarz or Ramon sector, Ramon-Ramon sector of our three, low energy fields. Plus, there will be also Chern-Simons contribution. And the Neuwirth-Schwarz action is the following. So this is a prefactor which contains 10-dimensional Newton's constant. And then there is an integral d10x square root of minus g. So everything here is 10-dimensional so far. And then in the next step, we will do something with this action so that it will factorize into piece that will describe the asymptotical entity sitter geometry and geometry of a phi sphere. But so far, everything is 10-dimensional. So here we have the usual Einstein-Hilbert contribution. And then it is coupled to the dilaton in the following way. So our dilaton enters the spectrum, remember. And then there was this form H3, right? So we had this free form. This is an analog of Maxwell field, but with one additional index squared, right? So this is Neuwirth-Schwarz contribution. And then there is also appropriate Ramon Ramon contribution, which comes. So this is, if you want, this is the analog of Maxwell or generalized sort of Maxwell fields. So again, with coupled to gravity, then x square root of minus g. And so here we have the fields which are, so they're coupled to a dilaton again, and then there is F1 squared, right? And this is the axion, and then it will be this piece e to the phi F3 tilde squared, and then, so this is the Ramon-Ramon potential A2. Remember, this is C, this is A2. And then finally, there is this F5. So I will write it like this as a usual Maxwell type term. Okay, so now the, and then there is a Chern-Simons term, which is minus 1 quarter in kappa over 10. Right, and here we have C4. So C4 is the potential that gives F5, which enters F5 tilde. And then there is H3, and then the edge F3. All right. So these are bosonic fields, right? We when I wrote the spectrum of the low energy excitations of type 2b supergravity, we remember that it is a supergravity, meaning that there is a fermionic completion to all these terms. So in principle, there are fermionic terms, so plus fermionic terms to complete type 2b supergravity, right? Because these are only bosonic contributions. Have to. So there are several remarks that I have to make. So remark zero, so to speak, is a small exercise. Well, an exercise for you is the following: take the section and vary the action as you normally do, and derive equations of motion that we had on board last time on Friday. In particular, check this little typo that somebody pointed out, that, you know, the degree of forms on two sides do not match, right? So my suspicion is that there was a typo. On the right-hand side, we had something like F3 tilde veg F3, something like that, right? My suspicion is that it's a trivial typo. It should be F5 tilde veg F3. Then it is an 8 form, and it seems to match. But please check this. I mean, this is a good exercise just to vary this thing, as you usually do. When you derive equations of motion of, let's say, Maxwell field coupled to gravity, right? So you should be able to write down the Euler Lagrange equation. In this case, it's a slightly, so I wrote last time, I wrote definitions of all this F3 and 5 tilde. I don't want to write them again. And also what this notation means. So hopefully it's a bit of work, but it's a useful exercise. And also check my typos last time, right? Now, more substantially, so I mentioned, so remember that we had this equation of motion of the self-duality condition on imposed on F5. And this term here can be written, as usual, as 1 half F5 tilde times star F5. Now, this is a Maxwell term. Unfortunately, if you impose this condition, then this is trivially zero, because that means that you have a form veg itself, right? And therefore, it doesn't look so. You cannot. So this, it is difficult to incorporate this condition automatically into the action. There are some, it's a known problem. I mean, it was around for many years. You could say that the action itself is not primary, right? That big discussion of about the hen and an egg, right? So who came first? So in principle, equations of motion, as we saw, right? So equations of motion so they appeared as conditions on maintaining the symmetry of the string theory at low energy, that was the alpha prime expansion, from equating to zero beta functionals. So in some sense, the equations of motion as we saw them were primary, and then we can notice that they follow from a certain low energy effective action, but that is a secondary sort of step. It's still not completely satisfactory. There are attempts to write down this action that would incorporate the self-duality condition. If you are interested in this particular subject, talk to me sort of in private. There are some papers on how to do that. They're not completely satisfactory for other reasons. So this will not affect what we are going to do, but be aware that this problem in principle exists with type 2B only. Now, more important remark is the following, that here, so I remember that we had this beta functionals, right, so beta mu nu of x equal to something equal to r mu nu plus and so on, plus corrections, and generically I said of order alpha prime, but of course in every particular theory, type 2b, type 2a, heterotic and so on, these corrections have their own form. I mean, they not necessarily could be alpha prime, it could be alpha prime cube or alpha prime of a power and so on. So it is specific to a particular theory. So in type 2B specifically, that we will need for computing corrections to, for example, transport coefficients in inverse powers of Hopf coupling. So let me put this as a remark. So there are corrections to the equations of motion and the action, of course, coming from the stringy terms, so to speak, with alpha prime not equal zero. So for example, and that's example that will be of primary importance for us. So if I write down this piece of bosonic action, this one, possibly emitting other fields. So let me just write the dilaton contribution, because that's important, and then there will be this piece with F5, right? So depending on how the definition of this, if you remember from last time, so there are some factors like phi factorial F5 squared plus other fields which we don't care about now, like F3, for example, and H3, but because they will not be very, very, very relevant. But what will be relevant is this contribution which come in from alpha prime correction, and this contribution has the following form times W plus higher orders, of course, because it's an infinite sequence. So gamma here is 1/8. Then there is this characteristic coefficient zeta function of 3 times alpha prime cube. Okay, and W is an expression which looks a bit monstrous, but in fact it's very nice. So let me H M N K C P M and Q. We might get to dealing with C. So I will when if we come to that, I will write it in more kind of in more detail, because now I just want to show. So I will write similar terms. I just want to show the structure of W rather than give you a quantitative expression. All right. Let me see. So this C, let me see, A, B, C, D, it's R, A, B, C, D, and then there is this unpleasant combination of G anti-symmetrized R, D, like this, B minus. You can ignore, I mean, at this level, I think you can ignore, unless we come to actually computing stuff with these objects, it will not be very relevant, but I'm just trying to be quantitatively correct. Nonetheless, E minus 2 R, and here is the antisymmetric combination of A, C, G, D, B. So this is called the Weyl tensor. And one thing that you can simply take out of this for now is, first of all, the dependence on alpha prime in type 2b. This is alpha prime cube, okay? And because in ADS-CFT, this will be converted into the Hooft coupling, inverse Hooft coupling, and that automatically tells you that corrections to your infinite Hooft coupling results, which will come from the Einstein-Hilbert gravity, will go as certain power of inverse Hooft coupling. And this power is dictated by this alpha prime cube, right? So we don't know the coefficient, but we know already the functional dependence on the coupling. Now, the second thing is that, so here we have four of these guys, right, in W. 1, 2, 3, 4, and sometimes this term is called R to the fourth term, in meaning that it contains, loosely speaking, four Riemanns, right? So that's R to the fourth term. Now, another remark is the following. You may wonder, if we have a particular solution of type 2b supergravity equations of motion, suppose we worked extremely hard and that system of equations, a nonlinear coupled system of equations that we had on board last time, is solved and we enjoy the exact solution to that system, we are very happy. And then somebody tells us that, you know what, in fact, there is an infinite tail of these alpha prime corrections, and what you were supposed to do is to compute corrections to your black hole or black brain metric in powers of alpha prime coming from all this infinite tail, right? And unless you do that, you know, your solution is, well, it's valid in some domain, but it's not really, right? So you may worry that whatever you discover as a solution of this system of equations will receive these alpha prime corrections, and indeed, most of the solutions will receive these corrections, and it is something that will give you also, in the context of ADS-CFT correspondence, corrections to the entropy or free energy of your finite temperature Sugerrand Mills, for example, or some other dual theory. But there are exceptions. So let me put this as a remark number two. So most solutions to the low energy equations of motion will receive alpha prime corrections corrections. But some of them do not, but some and usually usually the ones which are very symmetric in some sense. Such as, for example, Minkowski space, right? That's kind of trivial, but also pure ideas phi crosses phi. But not the black brain metric. Once you turn on temperature, this is lost. And you do get you do get corrections. All right. So then maybe jumping ahead a little bit. So recall the connection between the Newton's constant and L Planck, so that we discussed at some point, and the string length, right? So this is G squared string LS to the 8. So I want to emphasize this again, perhaps you're already sick of it, but I still want to emphasize it. So any classical solution characterized by a scale, let's say L, and this can be, for example, a Schwarzschild radius, or L ADS, the ADS radius, or some other scale, we'll generically get, generically, apart from some exceptions, both stringy and quantum gravity corrections. Unless we have this condition that our L, this characteristic scale, is much larger than LS, and L is much larger than LP. All right. So this is something that you need to keep in mind all the time when working with gauge gravity duality, because remember that gauge gravity duality is a subset of gauge string duality, and you are sitting in a particular corner of parameter space, and you're not allowed to venture outside unless you know how to venture outside reliably, right? And this condition should always be kept in check, right? So you need to, once you get any solution or you have corrections to the solutions and so on, you always need to keep in mind that this condition should be satisfied, right? So effectively, there are two parameters in string theory. One of them is alpha prime or LS. And effectively, in L1 is GS, right? Although, yes, it's expectation value of dilaton, but nonetheless, effectively, it is a string coupling constant as a second parameter. And this translates, if you want, into these two inequalities. If you don't want your classical solution, such as a Schwarzschild solution or ADS solution, to get either corrections in geometry, so these are corrections in geometry, saying that our string is taken to be a point-like object, right? But in reality, it is extended object. So alpha prime corrections correspond to the fact that the string is an extended object. So it's a stringy geometry that is corrected. And in addition to that, it's a quantum geometry because you have quantum gravity loops. And this is controlled by L Planck or G Newton then. And if you want to suppress these quantum loops, graviton loops, you have to take into account this inequality. Okay, so these are two statements. Now, so for example, in so again jumping ahead in ADS CFT, in idea CFT, as we will shortly discover, the ratio of L, the characteristic scale of our ADS space or symplectical ADS space to L string to the fourth is simply equal to G squared Young-Mills times NC, where this is a dual gauge theory characterized by a particular value of the rank of a gauge group and gauge coupling. And also GS will be related to G squared Young-Mills over 4 pi. So we'll talk about various normalizations. Sometimes you can see different numbers here because of different normalizations of your generators of the group. But the condition that L to the fourth is much larger than LS to the fourth, right? So that we are sticking to this limit of the parameter space, namely that L to the fourth over LS to the fourth is much larger than one, right? So this is classical geometry valid. Classical geometry valid. On the gauge theory side, this translates into the statement that the Hooft coupling, which is G squared Young-Mills and C, is taken to be extremely large. So this is one statement. And the second statement, the one with L Planck, is the following, because of this inequality, but because of this inequality that L to the fourth is much larger than L Planck to the fourth now, that's a second inequality. L Planck, remember, it was GS LS to the fourth. And that means that this ratio L, capital L to LS to the fourth must be much larger. So LS to the fourth, much larger than GS. But GS is apart from 1 over 4 pi is G squared Young-Mills. And therefore, you have this inequality that G squared Young-Mills NC is much larger than G squared Young-Mills. And that gives you the statement that NC much larger than 1. Okay, so this suppresses, so this means that no quantum graviton loops, right? No quantum gravity, right? And this is classical geometry valid. Okay, so these are two conditions. But again, so this is more general, of course. So this is just a particular example in the SFT correspondence. So again, in ADS CFT, right, so quantum gravity corrections to classical geometry are suppressed, and this means that stringy geometry is suppressed, and we are within the classical geometry. Okay. So on the gauge theory side, this means that Hooft coupling must be large, and NC must be large, and this is a euphemism, of course. In the limit, of course, this means that in fact they are taken to be infinite. And that in turn, this means that you do expect when you compute something, a correlator or transport coefficient or Wilson loop or anything, in principle, you expect corrections. So any result, some amplitude, right, will be the amplitude in the limit of lambda going to infinity and C going to infinity. That can be anything, right? So viscosity, for example. So you do expect corrections which go like appropriate power of lambda. And in fact, because we have alpha prime cubed there, then you do expect
lambda 2^3/2. And 1 over n c turns out to be 1 over n c squared, but we'll talk about this a bit later. So whatever you compute from classical gravity, or supergravity, will be sitting here, and that corresponds to infinite coupling and infinite n, but you do expect these corrections, and in fact, it is a non-trivial exercise to compute these corrections, and in one particular example, I hope we will be able to do it using this beautiful formula for W contribution, which is pretty interesting to deal with. All right. So now, so we had all these fields, many of them coupled, nonlinear partial differential equations, extremely difficult to solve generically. But we can extract some exact solutions, just like we do it for when you look at the usual Einstein's equations in four dimensions, and you're interested in, for example, finding a solution for a Schwarzschild black hole, meaning that you're interested in something which is spherically symmetric. How do you look for these solutions? You write down an ansatz for your metric and other fields that you might want to include. So you may include, for example, Maxwell field if you're looking for a charged black hole. You write down the ansatz, which would reflect the symmetries that you want your system to obey, such as spherical symmetry. And then you take this ansatz and you plug into equations of motion. You get a simpler set of equations, usually these are ordinary differential equations, for the coefficients of this ansatz. And if you're lucky, you can solve exactly this system of equations. All right, so one example of this is the black brain solutions. So let's consider some some solutions of low energy type 2B equations of motion. So let all fields except G mu nu, the 10 dimensional metric, F5 form, and the dilaton, which we'll take to be constant, be zero, right? So everything else we'll put to zero. Now, this happens to be, this is a self-consistent choice for the equations of motion which now become, right, so this is important, right? So we by hand we put most of the fields we put to zero. Every time you do something like that, you need to check very carefully that it is a self-consistent operation, right? Because what may happen is that you put some fields to zero, but then other fields, which are not zero, will source the presence of these fields through the equations of motion. In other words, you would have some equations where your right-hand side will be, left-hand side will be zero, but the right-hand side is non-zero, and therefore you'll have an inconsistency between in your equations of motion. So that should be checked. But you can check that indeed this is the case, looking at the equations of motion. And what remains is a very simple system, which we will now solve. It will be mu, rho, sigma, lambda, kappa, f mu, rho, sigma, lambda, kappa. So this is not f tilde, this is f already, f5.
And of course, we have to take into account the self-duality condition that F5 is equal to Hodge of F5. So this is our system. Now, there is a, I remind you that, well, there is also Maxwell equation for F5, but so D star of F5 equal to zero is automatically satisfied, But it is an additional check when you, so as a consequence of Bianchi and self-duality, right? So F5 equal to zero plus self-duality condition. Now, the solution to the system is the following. This will be our, so in your tutorial next tomorrow, we'll ask you to do various things to check that indeed this is a solution and do various things with this solution, so you will feel confident that indeed this is the solution of equations of motion, and this will be our primary character. R, here we have dr squared over f plus r squared d omega squared 5. So this is a metric on the 5 sphere where h of r is 1 plus l to the 4th over r to the 4th. And this f of r is 1 minus r naught to the 4th over r to the 4th. And so this is just a metric, right? To remember, we have these fields, so we need to write all of them. And in addition to that, there is also the Ramon-Ramon phi form. So phi form in 10 dimensions is minus 4 L squared over H squared R to the 5th square root R naught to the 4th plus L to the 4th. Now here comes 1 plus Hodge and the form itself, volume form dt, dx, dy, dz, dr. Now for future reference, right, so this is a solution, right? So so tomorrow in tutorials you'll be dealing with it, so you can now sort of just look at it without worrying too much. For future reference, consider also the near horizon limit r much less than L. The metric, the metric becomes ds squared 10 is equal to, let me write this metric, and when I explain the notations, I will introduce a Hawking temperature already now because it will be just convenient for us to deal with it in this form. Dt squared plus dx squared plus dy squared plus dz squared plus l squared over 4 u squared f of u plus
L squared d omega squared 5, metric on S5 here, where u is r naught squared over r squared, f of u is 1 minus u squared, and the Hawking temperature in this limit is r naught over pi L squared is the Hawking temperature, right? So the horizon here at u equals 1 and the spatial infinity at u equals 0. Okay. So what happened here? What happened here is the following. So you will check, it will be your part of your tutorial exercise, that this ansatz, I mean, this not ansatz, well, this thing plus this thing solves the equations of motion with a certain notations that, again, we will probably discuss in tutorials tomorrow. But the idea is that when you write down, so when you write down solution of this type, and by the way, in your references, I think I will, I will say this in a moment. But the thing is that this R that appears here in this solution is R, which is somewhat different from the radial coordinate which you encounter in Schwarzschild solution. Typically, in Schwarzschild solution, this R goes from 0 to infinity, right? And 0 corresponds to a singularity that sits in the center of your solution, the true singularity where your Kretschmann and other invariants blow up. Now, here, this R is counted from the horizon. So this solution describes the geometry outside of the horizon. You can write down the canonical solution, so to speak, with a different radial coordinate, which starts from 0 to infinity, and that you might do tomorrow. But simply one remark that might be of some use for you in the future. Now, the important thing is that, so this solution is designed to have a certain symmetry in its world volume. And if you take this F, which is usually called the Blackenin factor, so if you put R naught to 0, so this is a parameter which is related to the Hawking temperature there. If you put this to 0, F is equal to 1. And the metric, so the part of the metric inside this bracket is nothing but the Minkowski metric. So you are describing something, you're describing the horizon, right? The horizon since things here. You're describing your solution that has a Poincaré symmetry in 3 plus 1 dimensions. If F is equal to 1, if F is not equal to 1, then you are at finite temperature and your solution is no longer Poincaré invariant. But it is still invariant under rotations, right? So it's still has this invariance with respect to the rotational group. Now, what else? I think, yeah, so let me just continue with that. Okay. So, more generally, solutions to these equations of motion solutions to the equations of motion that can be type 2b that we are considering, type 2b with Ramon form fields
a p plus 1 with p odd. So you can easily check that the equations that we wrote had this Ramon-Ramon sector with these fields. Remember that p was equal to, for example, 3, right? And we had the potential C4, A4, and D of C4 was F5. So this is one example of them. And then there are other fields which also enter in solutions. But also, you can think of type 2A with P even, right? So, and also with the NS fields, which include the metric and some other forms, let's call them B, some coefficients, some forms, and the dilaton is one of them. So these solutions were considered and constructed long before the story of ADS-CFT surfaced from late 80s until beginning of 90s by a number of people. And let me mention some of them. Because you can, okay, so the various combinations, well, sometimes Horowitz and Strominger together or Garfinkel. So what I would like you to, so if you are interested generically, you can look at a very useful set of lectures by Kellestel, which is in your list of references, but let me also write it here. It's a fairly old set of lectures, but it doesn't make them less useful. Because you may forget about ADS-CFT or holography or anything, right? You just have a set of type 2B or type 2A equations of motion. And these are basically 10-dimensional gravity coupled to other fields. And you may wonder if there are solutions similar to, let's say, Schwarzschild black hole or Reichner-Northrum black hole, or perhaps black brain. So I forgot perhaps to mention that this is an example of a black brain, in this case, a black free brain. And brain refers to the fact that we have an extended world volume here, 3 plus 1 dimensional, would be Poincaré symmetric if not for this function f. And so you may analyze, so you may want to analyze the type 2B or type 2B to A equations of motion, looking for solutions of this type, right? So that's the philosophy, right? You have this Ramon-Ramon fields, right? So think of the analog of the something charged in electrodynamics, right? So you're looking basically at, okay, so there is gravity, let's say Einstein's gravity, usually in four dimensions, and then there is some charged object, electron, let's say. That means you have to consider Einstein's gravity coupled to electromagnetic field and also coupled to this source, maybe one electron, maybe many electrons, but the source of electric field. And you are looking at the solutions that support this combination of non-trivial combination of fields. What you find is a set of brains, and that's what these people were finding in late 80s. How precisely to do that is described in great detail by Kelle in this lecture. So if you want to actually derive this thing, right, not just to check that it solves equations of motion, but derive this solution and many others, for example, M brains
11 dimensional supergravity. I also described there. Then read this and follow various steps. It's very detailed and it's very good. So schematically, but what we have to understand is the following, that so somewhat schematically, one is looking for charged extended object with, let's say, mass. But if the object is extended, then it doesn't make sense to talk about mass, but it makes sense to talk about mass per unit volume. Let's call this M. And charge, when you say charge, you need to specify which potential you have in mind. And like in Maxwell theory, like you say A mu, but in this case, you have A P plus one form, right? So charged under some Ramon-Ramon form, for example, and charge per unit volume, okay, density of charge, Q. So then you write down the ansatz of the type ds squared 10 is some function of the radial coordinate minus f dt squared plus something which has a rotational symmetry. But if you want something more general, of course, you can happily have something which is inhomogeneous. It's more difficult to find, but you may try to look for solutions which are not rotationally invariant. So this is what you dictate, right? You dictate the symmetry, and then you see what the set of equations of motion tells you. Plus C of rho d omega squared 8 minus p. So this is the ansatz that you are plugging into your equations. And another condition is that just like the Gauss theorem, right, in usual electromagnetism, you want your total charge, the charge density, be equal to Q. So that's a condition similar to the one that you find in Maxwell's theory. So this means that so you have extended object. So let me draw this line representing the kind of the multidimensional, perhaps, like in this case it's 3 plus 1 dimensional, the multidimensional extended object. But it is embedded into higher dimensional, let's say 10 dimensional space, or 11 dimensional in case of M theory. And that means that there are transverse directions, of which there are many, right, in the case of, let's say, 3 plus 1 dimensions. And so what you do here is that it is similar to what you do in Maxwell theory when you have a wire, for example, right, an infinite wire uniformly charged with some charge density lambda. And then you encircle this with some cylinder, right? You integrate over, use Gauss theorem, right? Integrate with flux, which like this, right? And this is the integration that you have to do. Okay, so that tells you that this whole thing is proportional to the charge density of this solution. So these solutions might have either so solutions that you find, or these people found, they typically have M greater or equal to Q. And this is a condition that come from requiring the absence of naked singularity. Naked singularity, solutions with M equal to Q are called extremal. called extremal, and they will be characterized by the horizon area shrinking to zero. And remember that this would imply that the entropy of the solutions will go to zero. But non-extremal black, they're called black P brains. They typically have the Bekenstein-Hawking entropy greater than zero and the Hawking temperature greater than zero. And they are the ones that will be will be used for describing finite temperature EDS-CFT correspondence.
When you say a charge under the P+1 form, you mean the Noether charge?
I mean the analog electric. Yes, I mean the you can think of it as a Noether charge as well, but it's the analog of the electric or magnetic charge, right? So depending on some of these forms will be. So there is this duality between magnetic and, like in Maxwell's equations, except that in Maxwell's equations you have electric and magnetic monopoles, right? So some solutions will be analogs of magnetic monopoles, and some solutions will be analogs of Reissner-Nordström charged black hole in four dimensions. In fact, it's yeah.
Yes, you can have
situations in which a temperature will be vanishing, but not the area. Yes, that's one of the unfortunate. Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate features.
Usually, extreme solutions are solutions which have a vanishing temperature, right? But not entropy.
Well, the extremal solutions are the ones in which it's more subtle than that. So these are solutions in which mass density and charge density are equal.
Right.
What happens exactly to the horizon and the temperature when this happens? That's another question. So you need to look at. It does not.
Yes.
Yeah, so typically you have two, yes. Mm-hmm. Outer horizon and inner horizon, and they merge when this condition is satisfied. What happens exactly when they merge, that's more subtle. So it's not automatically implies.
Well, yeah, but what I was asking is, so I thought that the general feature of CMOS solutions was that they have a vanishing temperature, not a vanishing entropy. Because since you have a horizon area, as far as it's embedded in gravity, mm-hmm. you're going to have a non-vanishing entropy because the area is going to be finite, so the entropy is going to be finite.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what's going to vanish is the temperature, not the entropy in general. So that's why I don't understand.
Yeah.
If you have a black hole with it can have vanishing entropy in very exotic situations, but it cannot have a vanishing horizon area because if you don't have horizon area, you don't have a black hole. So it can be, for example, in higher order gravity, you can have vanishing entropy, for example.
Yes.
Not vanishing area.
Not vanishing area. Yes. So we are talking here about these solutions of this specific system of equations that we are considering, right? So, yes, there is a question of what happens if you consider higher order pieces, right? That's a separate story, and it's a rather long and non-trivial story how you account for them. That's true. So what we are looking now at is the set of solutions that come precisely from the supergravity low energy equations of motion, right? And for them, as you mentioned, yes, typically will be two horizons that we merge when m is equal to q, right? And then we will come back to this later on. We'll consider applications to condensed matter, so more examples of this type. Right. So let me. Okay. So that's already the end. But let me just finish. Give me 1 minute. So let me write down the extremal. So the extremal p-brain solution. So the extremal. Brain solution, which is just that thing, but so this is h to power minus 1/2 of r minus dt squared plus dxi so p going from I going from 1 to p. Plus h to power 1/2 r squared d. That's right. I'm somewhat worried about this, but okay, 8 minus p. Okay, check this r squared. The dilaton is gs, so maybe it's a good exercise. 3 minus p over 4, the function of r. And yeah, that's a good exercise. So let's check this in tutorial. So 1 plus l 7 minus p over r 7 minus p, where l 7 minus p is a number which is related to q. And dp here is 2 5 minus p pi 5 minus p over 2 gamma function of 7 minus p over 2. Now, one remark. So this is an exercise for you for tomorrow to check that it is a solution for arbitrary for p which corresponds to these Ramon-Ramon charges. Now, q is quantized. One minute. That so this is called the Dirac quantization condition, or Dirac-Zwanziger, more general quantization condition, and the inequality. So the last thing that we will talk about later on is that the statement that this inequality m, the absence of Nankin singularity, this is also a BPS condition. So one may look at all this as an algebraic exercise, and because it is a supergravity, we can look for. There is a certain algebra associated with the supergravity. You can look for BPS condition, and these solutions will be satisfying this condition that reflects the absence of naked singularity in a gravity language. Now, yeah, so that has to be checked somehow. I'm worried about this r squared. So what we are going to do next is the following. We will analyze these solutions in a certain detail, and then remember that we're analyzing them in a language of type 2B supergravity, which contains closed strings, and that means it contains gravitons. Another language in which we describe our brains, our deep brains, will be the language of open string theory, where you have topological defects in 10-dimensional space with open strings attached to them, and fluctuations of open quantum fluctuations of open strings at low energy are described by a gauge theory. So no graviton in the game here. Gravitons are decoupled. So only gauge fields. And this description in a certain region of parameter space will be given by a particular supersymmetric quantum field theory, which happens to be n equals 4 superrank Mills for the simplest example. And then we will see, so we will suspect that these two descriptions will give us, these are two descriptions in different languages describing one and the same object, namely the collection of these brains. And we will have a number of tests that would check this conjecture, and then we formulated the SCFT. That our primary goal is using this metric. So this metric that appears here, this will be our main hero, because in the end, what we want to compute is something associated with thermodynamics and transport of our dual gauge theory at infinitely strong coupling, and possibly corrections to these transport coefficients and so on. And we'll be doing this by analyzing fluctuations of this metric and fluctuations of this set of solutions there. All right, so we'll continue tomorrow and also in tutorials.